Welcome to DataLab Dialogues. My name is Thomas Madsen. I'm part of the Danish SAP office, and with me today I have Kalle Bergstrøm.
Thank you, Thomas. Nice to be back. Really looking forward to this.
Yes, we are in London today, meeting up with Alina from the UK SAP office. Welcome to you, Alina.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. Also very excited to be here and looking forward to a productive conversation.
Okay. And so are we, for sure. The topic of today is TCO. So, how do you calculate TCO, so total cost of ownership? Specifically, of course, when you are looking at moving your SAP workloads into what we call RISE with SAP. And I know, Alina, you have done quite a few calculations in that area and are proficient in that. So we are looking forward to hearing what are the ups and downs of calculating TCOs. But before we get started, why don't you introduce yourself briefly, and where is it that you come from, and how did you appear here?
Absolutely. So, Alina Yuhemenko, officially I'm the RISE Value Advisor in SAP. So I try to look at what is the value of RISE, and I try to explain it to the customers in different perspective, which TCO, total cost of ownership, is one of them. So I've been with SAP for 3 years, and I joined SAP as the part of the impact program. So SAP invests a lot into new talent, into people bring from different countries and that can bring different perspective. Mm-hmm. So I joined through this incredible program. I had a lot of learnings, and it was really good for me to understand the company, the strategy. And I joined in a very good period, 2020, when we just announced RISE. So I am here from the beginning and I see the whole evolution. Before SAP, I did my MBA in Germany in Mannheim Business School. And before coming to Germany, I lived and worked 5 years in China, also helping and consulting customers.
Okay, how was that?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that was incredible. So a very different culture, different food. They don't speak English fluently, so you have to be really open-minded and be willing to learn a lot. So I absolutely loved the experience.
Did you pick up any of the Chinese?
Spoke Mandarin before going there, so for me it was a bit easier.
So you blended right in.
Yeah, I will not check you. I will not check you.
Oh, that's great. But have you had a chance to use that experience also in your let's say day to day work in SAP? You always learn something, of course.
I would say yes. I was able to use that experience because. Customers are always customers, so you really need to understand their perspective, you really need to understand what's their background, how they are thinking, what they are looking for, and like growing up in Ukraine, which is developing country, then going to China, which is super developing country, and coming back to West Europe really gives you to understand all of this perspective of different people as well as different companies and where they operate, how can we help them, because I know that some of our customers have questions about China, for example, and how can we operate them. That definitely helps.
Exactly, this Chinese Cyber Act law and that you need maybe a single system there.
That's correct.
But so you're really a global citizen. That's cool.
Yeah.
Compared to me, Sweden only.
and me living in Denmark. I've lived 2 years abroad. That's it.
Yeah. Nice. So, where did you live?
In Abu Dhabi, in the United Arab Emirates. Yeah, that was an experience as well, for sure. Yeah. So, but that's a long time ago.
I lived once in Stockholm. Enough with that,
maybe. So you are a value advisor.
Yes,
so
correct.
You work basically calculating value, and value, of course, includes the cost part. So what's a day like in your job? I mean, do you have one customer at a time, or are you juggling all sorts of activities at the same time?
So I think it depends on the period and with whom I'm engaged. My day-to-day looks really good because I have a lot of customer engagements, and these are different customers from different industries as well as different sizes. So I would say that maybe 20 or 30% of time I am spending on with customers, understanding their requirements, how can we work together, because value advisors really try to bring this tailored method of really helping the customer out. The rest of the time we do spend on the background research, so I really need to understand the customer, his priorities, why they are doing it, as well as internal communication. So this is very, very briefly. Talking about the whether I'm working with one customer or whether it's a few customers, it depends again how what are the requirements of the customer and what the customer wants to achieve at the end. There are customers who just want a total cost of ownership analysis, which we might do in a few weeks, right? If we're doing collaboratively, we can like finalize it in a few weeks. But there are customers who really need to understand the overall value. So they will try to build a TCR analysis, but also will try to understand what other benefits they will get on top of just cost. So we will talk a lot about the RISE value, potentially the S4HANA or the overall digital transformation value as well. And the last one, there are customers who are trying to go even deeper. So we have a lot of different types of workshops. We are calling them discovery workshops, and during these workshops, we try to understand the current system of the customer in details. So all the nitty-gritty, how they're running the ERP estate currently, as well as show them the future. So sometimes I'm also engaged in this one. So I act like a project manager. I try to summarize all the knowledge that we get from the customer and then use this to build the value proposition to them.
Okay. Who is your typical stakeholders at the customer?
It depends on the customer side. Usually the head of ERP or somebody who is engaged in ERP transformation. But I was also involved with, for example, a chief transformation officer. So he was driving this transformation because he believed that it's extremely important for the company. And what we were doing, we were trying to create a very tailored case what he knew his stakeholders were looking for. So we had a lot of very, very specific requests for him. For example, can you analyze our peers and what the industry is doing? And what else do we need to bring to really understand RISE and really understand what would happen with us in 5 years or 10 years?
Okay. But let's get some definitions in place. TCO, I mean, what is that? I mean, what does the label TCO cover?
So TCO is shortened, and it's an abbreviation of total cost of ownership. And what it means the whole life cycle cost of running your ERP estate. So that would be your cost that you are paying to SAP. We call it the maintenance cost. If you are on, we call on premise, maybe you're on a hyperscaler or you are on your own data centers. So this would be the cost that you are paying to SAP, as well as it will have a lot of additional costs. For example, the cost that you are paying to third-party suppliers. This can be application managed services, technical managed services, the hyperscaler, and a lot of other costs that you are incurring on a day-to-day basis for running your operational system, like ERP estate.
Yeah. So basically a sum of all the costs associated with
that. Is that somehow sometimes debatable? That our customers, no, I don't want to bring that in, or is there some consensus in the business?
So as I mentioned, we try to do and tailor it to the customers. So we do have the templates, but then of course we discuss it with the customer because some of the costs are sometimes very hard to discover. For example, the security costs. This is the area where some of our customers want to improve, and the maturity maybe is not there yet. So I would say they don't do all the premiums that RISE offers. And for this reason, it's very hard to calculate, let's say, opportunity costs of the security, the premium security. So this is something that some customers, for example, would say, let's escape or let's delete from the TCO analysis, because it's very hard to compare these apples to apples.
Yeah, okay. When you say opportunity cost, what do you mean there? What does that mean?
So in this specific case around the TCO analysis, we assume that, or like we, for example, know from the customer that they don't do vulnerability testing twice a year, or they don't do some other security procedures that in RISE they do for free because it's a package in RISE, and our specialists are doing that. So by not doing that, they are more inclined to get, for example, the cyber attack, right? Yeah. Because they're not protected to that level that they would be protected in SAP. But can we calculate it? It's debatable, right? Yeah. Because if the customer didn't have the cyber attack in the last 5 years, they assume that the probability is very low. When it happens in real life, because
it can be very costly. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. We do have a lot of research external from partners where, like, they calculate for each industry how often do cyber attacks happen. So it can be extremely difficult to recover.
So, but I guess that's hard then to argue that we need to include that cost. Yeah.
Because we don't have that cost.
Yeah.
Correct.
But SAP has it, but the risk profile is then higher on you who don't have it.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's very important to differentiate between the total cost analysis or costs that are there and you are paying, but also all the future premium that you are getting, for example, because these models are a bit different, so it's sometimes a bit challenging to compare them like one to one when they are so different. But we are trying to educate the customer about and we are trying to list them as the potential benefits if we cannot calculate.
And does it ring a bell with the customer when you explain these things, or is it, you know, very, very different from customer to customer?
I would say it's different from customer to customers, but in my experience, all customers are liking the premiums, right? And they are very happy that, for example, SAP provides these services. They do ask a lot of additional questions, of course, which is good, right? Because then we can have more elaborate conversations and we can educate the customer and they can make a better decision at the end.
So so how does this all start? When are you brought into the picture? Is that, so I mean, I guess it happens in different ways, but any examples?
Again, depends from customer to customer. We do have the customers that are coming from very specific requirements. So for example, so we've been talking with SAP for some time and we do know that these are our requirements, and in order for us to understand, could you help us, for example, to calculate the TCR? So as soon as the customer raises this request with our account executive or people with whom he is in touch, of course, then I would be brought in the pictures. We have other customers who want to understand and require more help and support. So with those customers, I would start a bit earlier, I would say, in those discover sessions that we discussed previously. So I would start from the start, and then we would slowly work into the overall broader engagement, TCO will include.
Would there be a difference if the customer is TCO focused or value focused from when you start? I'm just guessing that.
Yes, there is a difference, and in my experience, the customer who wants to understand the broader landscape, we will discover way more interesting facts that would strengthen the overall engagement and would show them more value. If it's only the cost discussion, sometimes it gets a a little bit limited, and they are just looking very narrowly, I would say, into just total cost of ownership, which is good, but also you need to consider other factors. For example, are you able to use more innovations? Are you able to enable the business to function better? Are you using the future generative AI capabilities that our offerings provide? So it's always good to have a little bit broader conversation and understand the solution from different angles, not only the total cost of ownership.
I guess, I mean, often I see, at least from my perspective, I meet with clients that are, you know, they are running on-premise now and they are looking into a data center shift, and, you know, RISE could be one option. It could also be an option to just stay where they are, right? But they are very, very TCO focused. I mean, they know they need to go to S4, but that's it. I mean, it's just a migration. So they are solely focused on the TCO bit of actually migrating S4. So those you meet as well, I guess.
Yes, and this is very true that it's extremely important part of the overall conversation, the TCO analysis. And, well, I think it's very logical, right? Because these are the current cost that customer is paying and also the future cost. So this is something that they can project and they can understand that will be coming from their budget. So it would be better for their budget planning as well as understanding what else can we do, right? Because when we are talking about TCO analysis, we do have different types of costs. We also do projections for the future. We will look at the industry, what's happening. For example, in the last 2 years, there has been a huge inflation everywhere. So we do know that vendors increase prices. So we'll also try to project what would happen in the future and whether the fees that you've been paying like last 5 years or last 2 years would stay the same. But also it's very important to consider other factors. For example, SAP is really supportive of the customers moving to SaaS model, because we understand that the better experience we bring to the customer, the more loyal the customer would be, the better relationship would be there. So we would also look at different other perspectives, such as incentives. We can talk with our partners. We also have SAP incentives just to help the customer. So total cost of ownership is extremely important, because they will consider all of these factors and they will think like, okay, so how much can we invest and how much support will we get? So to have this true partnership and collaboration. Whereas if we're talking about the benefits are always good to have, but benefits is the future projections, right? They will need to go live before they will start realizing the benefits.
There is a cost of getting the benefits.
Exactly, So, yeah.
Wasn't there? No. I should have known this. The wasn't there some kind of announcement from SAP that we will help them to fund the transformation or
correct?
Something?
Correct. Yes. So we did announce it, I guess, 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And we do have the transformation incentives for the customers who are moving from ECC to RISE, but also we consider the customers that just moved like 1 or 2 years ago, and we understand that they would ask very logical questions. Why do I need to
why didn't I get
now?
It?
Yeah, so we also have the incentives for the customers who are currently already on S/4HANA but want to move to RISE.
Okay. And that's sort of an incentive to help them migrate. I read somewhere that we sort of perceive the move to RISE as being the last upgrade and migration that a customer will do. After that, everything in their life will be easier.
Yeah, so let's hope it will come true. But I do know that, and I heard a lot, even from our senior management, that this is what SAP is trying to realize. We do understand that in the past, migrating the system was extremely difficult and really costly. And we do understand that we are moving to the SaaS model, and in SaaS model, it would be easier. So we are going into that direction. And I think it would be possible to do.
But I guess you factor that in when you calculate the TCO going forward, or what?
We try to factor it by clean core, but mm-hmm. I would say that this is not the TCO analysis. This okay. is more around the benefits.
Okay.
So by being truly SaaS company, having SaaS solutions, they would be able to adopt new innovations faster.
Yeah.
In TCO analysis, we have another part which is called the upgrades.
Yeah.
So we assume that if they are on SaaS, it would be easier to do upgrades. So yeah. maybe just to summarize, some of the parts we try to bring, but there are a lot of additional parts that we are showing as the value, but we don't consider the direct costs.
Okay. But what then? Okay. So how do you calculate the TCO? What's the tools you use, and how do you go about? Do you basically mm-hmm. go and interview the customer, or what's the approach?
So there are three different approaches, and it depends on the customer, and it depends what kind of collaboration we're having. We have outside-in approach, when the customer will say, sorry, I don't have time, or my data is very confidential, and I don't want to share anything. Could you please build your projections of our costs,
mm-hmm.
and then could you educate us how you build it, and then we will take it and we'll just put our numbers and we'll present the case to our, for example, CapEx board.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is one approach when the customer maybe would not be able to recover any costs. The other approach is somewhere in the middle, when the customer can get some costs, but they need our support in other costs. So there we try to collaborate, and we will try to use our knowledge, because we've been working and we've been building the TCO analysis for the last 3 years. So we acquired a lot of knowledge from different customers and industries, as well as we'll try to use the external costs.
Yeah.
And by external tools, I mean that, for example, we have the Azure calculator. So if the customer doesn't know its infrastructure costs, and we know the provider, in this case, for example, the Microsoft Azure. So what we could do, we can go online and we can write down the sizing of the customer assistance, and we can find out the costs.
Mm-hmm. So that's very transparent. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. that's very transparent yeah. and mm-hmm. very logical, and then customer will have to know.
I guess that is important, to be exactly. transparent. Where yeah. did I get my numbers from, so that
you
get some
yes.
kind of consensus in the team?
Yeah, so we spend a lot of time to explaining our assumptions and explaining where did we get these data sources, because it's extremely important to build the trust and credibility. And the third approach is the collaborative approach. This is the approach that we will have the data request files that we share with the customer. So we pre-built all the types of questions that can come into the analysis. So for example, if we're talking about technical managed services, we will have a few subcategories just to help the customer to understand what costs do they need to think of when they want to compile this final number, for example, for technical managed
Can you give
services.
An example? I mean, because for me, TCO is just a big lump sum. So what sort of details are the customer requested to provide here?
Sure. So if we're looking broader at the TCO, there would be from 7 to 15 line items.
Okay.
Very important, we will consider the current maintenance costs. And if they want to stay on premise, and for example, they are on ECC, we'll also consider the future licensing.
Yeah.
So maintenance licensing. Also, we'll look at other costs that customer acquires on a day-to-day basis. This would be the application managed services.
Mm-hmm.
So basically everything that covers the application layer, and the other one would be the technical managed services.
Yeah.
So everything, how can they manage their infrastructure, databases. Then we do have the infrastructure itself. So this would be the cost that they are paying either for their data centers or to the hyperscaler. In this case would be the Microsoft, Google Cloud, or
mm-hmm.
AWS for consuming infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we will look at a few other costs. So for example, the customer would have the upgrades every 2 years or 3 years or 5 years, depending on the customer and the landscape. So we'll also try to consider this one, as well as the internal costs. For example, what's the governance cost of managing all of these contracts?
Exactly.
What's the internal FTE costs for still trying to run something inside and managing between the vendors? So all of these costs we'll consider, and this would be the major line items in our TCO analysis.
Oh, okay.
And then there is a time dimension also.
Correct.
That
correct.
How long would
correct.
We drag this out?
Correct. So what we're trying to do, we try not only to look at the current costs, for example, that they will inquire in 2024, we'll try to think like, okay, so in order to do a very valid analysis, let's take 5 years or 7 years or 10 years, because in the model that SAP provides, it's very concrete, right? So you are getting the SaaS solution, you are getting the technical managed services, infrastructure, the software itself, and you are getting everything for a very fixed fee.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, how long is your contract with your other vendor? Do you need to renew it? Will it be more costly? So all of this we need to consider to give a very comprehensive picture of everything what's happening with the costs running ERP estates.
That it sounds like a big job and somewhat complex. Many numbers and balls to juggle. What is the main challenge here? I can't do it. So why do we need a specialist like you?
I think the main challenge is when customers don't want to collaborate and are not open-minded. So.
Mm-hmm.
This would be, of course, difficult to prove the point or even explain how we came to this conclusion if our customer is very skeptical.
Yeah.
So for that, like in my line of work, I believe that the best way is to come prepared, do a lot of your homework. And what we usually do, if customer has any questions, we're not just explain it, and in the meeting we also do a lot of presentations. And for example, if the customer will ask me like, why did you get this number, I would have a lot of additional resources to show and, for example, share with him or her that this is not just created I don't know from my head, but this is really the research that has been done. So by this way we are trying to explain and educate the customer, not just tell him what the number is
and what the account executive wants to just sell. It fact-based approach.
Exactly.
To build
Correct.
trust.
Mm.
yeah
Are you sometimes working with third parties to, let's say, get a second opinion or someone to support your perspective? Like, I don't know, it could be PricewaterhouseCoopers or Deloitte or something like that.
I would say that we work with the business case, so more value perspective, but maybe with the total cost of ownership. No, the reason for that, customer wants still to have everything confidential. So not that often, specifically
for
this piece of work.
Yeah.
Just because the numbers are very, very confidential. And even within the team, I would say only like two people or three people in SAP team would see these files. All the rest would not be able to get the access.
So, So you keep it strictly on your laptop.
I'm trying.
But now when we have broken down the TCO perspective, the value side of it, what would that be compiled of?
So we have three different groups of value, and so one of that would be the future and better innovation, right? So this is everything about the fast upgrades and be able to use the, for example, S/4HANA capabilities faster. So on average, every year we release around five or six 600 of new capabilities, but it depends, it's overall. Yeah. But then, of course, we need to sort it by industries and which one would be applicable for the customer. Mm-hmm. But this is still a very good and big number. So mm-hmm. if the customer is on our SaaS model, on RISE, as well as if the customer is listening to SAP and having this clean core concept, so mm-hmm. basically trying to keep the core clean, then it's much easier for them to adopt this innovation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The way I know it, that sometimes upgrades are happening on Friday, the customer closes the system. For example, they go home because it's a weekend, and on Monday they open it and they have new capabilities. Mm-hmm. It's that easy right now. So this is one part, and we look at different perspective of this innovation and value that we bring. So it can be either from pure S/4HANA capabilities, but we have a lot of other RISE. So for example, here I'm talking about the $3 billion investment into generative AI that mm-hmm. SAP announced, and we are developing a lot of different use cases, whether it's S/4HANA specific use cases. We are also trying to develop the migration AI to support the customer to migrate their mm-hmm. system to RISE, which I think would be very helpful, and this is something what I see customer really appreciate, as well as more specific capabilities, for example, everything around sustainability, green ledger, mm-hmm. to enable the customer to be future ready for their journey in the future and to be competitive. So this is one bucket.
Before you move on, I completely agree, these are important points, but they must also be super hard to quantify.
So we do have the calculations, so we do have the templates, mm-hmm. but then we require the customers to work with us to understand, for example, how many people are working right now, and if they are using Joule or if they are using the cash application, and we would have the account receivable matching, how fast it would be. So this is something where we try to educate the customer about the capabilities, about the future roadmap, and we are asking them to work with us together. It's not just SAP view. This is something that we together believe we would be able to achieve. And on this point, a very cool part what my job is the value realization. So in SAP, as I mentioned, we are trying to be a truly cloud company. We have this concept that after the customer goes live, we reconnect with the customer after 6 months or 1 year, mm-hmm. and we try to see whether everything what we built before customer went to RISE mm-hmm. really came true, and whether there are some capabilities that the customer, for example, didn't adopt. And if they haven't achieved some specific values, why is that? And how can we help? Mm-hmm. So we kind of like try to bring this smoothless SaaS experience to our customers now.
And I guess this we will need to increase this. If we are a cloud company, and did you get it? Did you get that value that we
continuous feedback?
Yeah,
it's extremely important because we are moving to the cloud. Customer also understand this, but also we have the reputation, right? And I do know that we were on-premise customer, and not every customer understands how much we have transformed in the last 3 or 4 years. So I think this part really helps to assure the customer that whatever we're doing, whatever value we're trying to discover, would be something that they would be able to realize.
So that was the first part. You mentioned three sections.
So the second part would be everything around the operations, better, smoother operations. And the third part would be around the assurance and the risk aversion. So it would be the future cybersecurity costs, legal costs, or anything around that regard. Mm-hmm. And operations, we're talking about technical managed services, governance, and we are trying to discover more what SAP brings to the table and how can we support to make sure that you truly have this SaaS experience.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. That is tough. But I guess as you do this, you continuously negotiate with the client. I mean, you may assess that. And when we talk TCO, it's often how do we measure it? Is it in money, or is it in FTEs, or whatever it is, you I guess you have your point of view, they have theirs.
Yeah.
So how do you arrive at a consensus?
What we try to do, for example, I'm talking about my experience. I try to be very customer oriented, and I try to understand their perspective even before I start calculating. That's why I mentioned we are doing so much research before we start working together. And doing all of this research, we come to the customer and we explain to him how did we arrive to this data point, right? Because what we try to calculate, of course, would be in monetary term, but we try to explain the logic, and then we also try to validate this with the customer. So it wouldn't be that the customer is saying one thing and SAP is saying another thing. It would be that we will show our approach and we'll start by working together and trying to analyze all the numbers. So at the end, they can have the confidence that whatever we have built is something that belongs to their company. So we're helping them.
Because I guess that ERP manager or transformation officer are gonna go to someone else, and can he or she stand by that number?
Yeah, he needs to take ownership.
Exactly.
And believe in it.
So that's why we are called the value advisors. We advise you and we help you. We bring the best of SAP. We bring our expertise. We bring the industry knowledge. We can share what other customers have achieved. But at the end, this is your transformation journey, and we try to do as much as possible to support you and tailor the approach and try to help you as much as possible. But at the end, this is something that you need to believe as the head of ERP, and you need to be confident that you are able to achieve, because they do have their KPIs as well,
and
right?
They will be measured as well. And
correct.
So it's important to steer towards those KPIs.
Okay. Are there any of all of these elements that go into a value-TCO calculation? Mm-hmm. Are there anything that typically sticks out, or perhaps in the other area, is there something that you tend to forget all the time? You don't forget it, of course. You bring the customer's attention to it, right? But what is it that we often forget when we calculate a TCO, if there is anything?
I do think that we have templates, so it's hard to forget something. I would rephrase it maybe in another way, that some of the input into the TCO is sometimes hard to quantify it.
Yeah.
For example, the SLAs. This is something that SAP is really good at, because we provide the compound SLA for the whole stack of running the system. But are we able to measure it? Theoretically, yes, but is it something that is practically possible to realize? Okay, maybe I'm complicating it. Let me give you a very specific example. So we have 99.7 or 99.9, or we do have a new model with 99.95 SLAs, depending on the customer. So we promised the customer that they would run the system without any disturbance. Very often, for on-premise customers who are running on their data centers, it's almost impossible to achieve these numbers. But if they...
Sorry, why is that?
Oh, that's because we're having a lot of different layers, right? We would have the databases, we would have the operational system, we'll have the technical managed services. And if one of these layers doesn't work, sometimes it's very hard for the customer to understand which layer doesn't work and to bring resources there. So in RISE, we have people who specialize in it. We are running so many systems of different customers. So of course, we have huge teams that already know the details and can spot it even before it happens. Yeah. Whereas yeah. for customer, it would be very hard to achieve this level of expertise and, for example, automations, because we invest a lot into our tools to make sure that the customer runs smoothly. So let's assume that something doesn't work out and the system doesn't work. So the customer theoretically is losing money. So we can put it in the TCO analysis as better SLAs for RISE. But is it really that the customer is losing money? Like, because it's very related to revenue. So this is something that would be very negotiable and we will try to come to some compromise.
Yeah, yeah,
but
okay.
these are, I would say, the cost that sometimes we forget about.
Yeah. Ah, yes. So what is the impact of downtime and low SLA? Yeah.
Exactly. That's I can just, now thinking when you said, if I'm just having a finance solution, maybe you can catch up.
But
if you have a manufacturing plant and you're not producing fresh milk, I guess then it can be significant.
That's a disaster. Yeah,
exactly. So then.
That's important to bring in.
Yes.
For sure.
But sometimes it's hard to explain this disaster to the customer. Maybe they understand, of course, this, but how do you quantify it? It can be a challenging conversation.
I mean, so you mentioned yourself 99.7, and you explain it as if it is good, but I also meet with clients that when they say then see the number 99 points, I know it's the full stack, and that's what we keep explaining, right? But on the surface, it doesn't look impressive. They are looking for 5.9s or whatever it might be, right? So how do you manage that conversation and explain?
So I think we try to dig deeper into details and explain how it is calculated.
Yeah.
Because if you run very, very easy calculations, when you multiply 99.99 by 99.99, even by mass, it's already reducing.
Yeah.
So by multiplying, for example, 5 layers, it's a bit more difficult to achieve this 99.7.
Yeah.
And I think the best way to really have this conversation is to look at the current as a situation.
Yeah.
Customers are very often confident that their systems have availability 100%, but then when you look at the contracts and when you look at these 5 layers or 6 layers, and then when you try to multiply these numbers to explain the logic how SAP is calculating it, then it's a very different story, because to achieve this 99.7 or 99.9, not all customers would be able to do so.
Okay.
Again, I think the best way is just by educating the customer and explaining it.
Okay.
Wow. Enlightening.
So let's have it then. What is the bottom line? Is RISE having a lower TCO?
That's a very interesting question that you're asking. So I can't answer this directly.
Of course not. The case for all customers, right?
But I can assure that from SAP perspective, we try to make it as attractive as possible, and we try to consider all the types of incentives, everything what we can give to the customer, all the support to make it a pleasurable journey for the customer. So I wouldn't say that yes, but I think I would say that in most cases, we try to achieve it.
And I'm
also thinking, I've listened to the responsible person from the ECS, Peter Plume, who you can Google up on LinkedIn or wherever. And I mean, so much investment that goes into making this optimized.
Yes.
Big is beautiful in that sense. That we AI and all kind of optimizing our infrastructure. As you said, we are running ridiculous amount of customers on our
so
we need to be better and better
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and you mentioned it yourself with log automation. I mean, with these thousands of systems, I mean, we have seen everything there is to see in a log file, and our automation jobs knows that, right? So, so as you say, I mean, whenever there are the smallest signs of something going wrong, then we will know it and we will
fix it for many.
Exactly. See and fix it for many. Yeah.
See it once and fix for many. Yeah. It's.
And I mean, there are so skilled people out there with the companies, but they run just one system, So you tend to kind of you don't know what new will come. Whenever a new release is there, you will have a break-in period with but that break-in period SAP has had, right? Because we have done that exact upgrade many, many times before.
And for example, for our security upgrades and patching, for patching, it's done automatically, right? Mm. So we know that customer that is Ryan and Rice have the latest security patching to make sure that the system is protected. Another interesting fact that regulations are developing in each country. So what SAP is doing, we are doing this legal patching, right? To make sure that your system is out to date and you will not require any legal cost. Yeah. If the customer is staying on premise, sometimes it's hard, just because the investment into this would be much more than SAP is using economy of scale and applying it to hundreds of customers or thousands, hundreds of thousands of customers, the same legal patch, right? For example, we have some industry patches that we release every year. So all of this goes to the premium that is would not be reflected in TCO, but would be something that the customer would be able to use on day-to-day basis just to have very smooth operations.
Yeah. It's what you call the opportunity cost, or?
We are calling it the value well as your opportunity cost.
Okay. But that's I'm actually, really excited. This is the best explanation I've heard in terms of what is the value of RISE? I mean, you can calculate TCO on its own. But what I think we forget when we calculate TCO is that some of the value parts needs to go in. You need to take that perspective also. Yeah. Even if you are not, if you are saying to yourself, my system should run exactly as it runs now, but just in another place or in another version. Mm-hmm. I don't want to consider value of the new, but you need to take that into account. Yeah.
Because it is a modern new architecture run in the latest and the greatest.
The cloud perspective,
Cool.
Awesome.
I guess this is the reason why we try to build the overall case, not just TCO, and we try to explain to our customers that even if you are focused on total cost of ownership, you still need to acknowledge all the investments that SAP is doing and everything what is there for you. For example, some of the customers are telling us that, we don't need Reledger right now. Regulations are still not there till 2027, 2028. Yeah. So we will go to RISE when the regulations are there. However, I think that customer needs to look at different approach. For example, that if you have this capability, you can just click the button and it's already there. And you can use it at your convenience. Mm-hmm. But if you are expecting that you can do it in the future, what if something goes wrong? What if your migration project is delayed? Then it will give you a lot of complications. What if you are not able to find the resources that you need to do this migration? Because we know that there are a lot of customers who are still staying on ECC, and we do know that these customers might be running at the last minute, and then there would be a huge spike of resources and huge spike of future costs. So I think that all of this is something that we try to educate the customer that sometimes they don't take into the perspective what's the cost of doing nothing, we call it.
Do it later can also have risks and problems.
Because somehow customers assume that this is just TCO, but it's also other different parts that we try to discuss and try to customer to understand what's the future.
Yeah, perfect. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I will make sure to remember that whenever I have that dialogue. So and this has been super illuminating, yeah. I think.
Very, very
interesting. Of course, you can't go into every Excel line mm-hmm. in a conversation like this, but you have the templates yeah. to support the TCO calculations. Mm-hmm. Is that, by the way, something that you you give away? Let's say the customer wants to do the calculation on his own. Can they call you and ask for a template or let me...
Yes, so we're trying to support the customer as much as possible. Yeah. And if the customer wants to do the TCO themselves, mm-hmm. I will provide all the templates because yeah. it's a lot of work that has been done internally within yeah. SAP. It has been validated with many customers. And sometimes just to gather this knowledge and to build your own TCO will require you many, many hours of work. Yeah, so you're yeah. saving a lot of time. Yeah. But what I would try to do, I would try to explain the customer how we're doing it and what he or she needs to consider.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that we will try to educate the customer as much as possible. For the customer, when they are calculating, just to have a very realistic picture. Don't miss any of the hidden costs that we've talked
today.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
So,
Okay, good. Let's do that. Let's do that. Let's bring it back to the Nordics. This information.
Yes.
So, but before, thanks a lot, Alina, for these wise words. But before we round it off, any thoughts on the future? Where's is there? I mean, we've heard about the transformation incentive.
Yeah.
Other things boiling in your area with respect to RISE.
So I am very excited for the future. I think that we are on the right journey. Mm-hmm. I see more and more customers understanding the value of RISE and understanding the value of true SaaS solution and moving there. So what we're doing right now, working on a lot of cool projects internally in SAP. For example, we are working on the clean core.
Yeah.
So we're trying to build a dashboard and we're trying to have this specific teams of like we call them services that would help the customer and educate them how to really stay on clean core and how to really utilize to the maximum the newest capabilities that in SAP. So for example, this is one of the areas. I think SAP is investing a lot in the security, which is another area just to make sure that our customers will not have any issues in the future. And of course, new capabilities. Everyone is talking about generative AI. Mm-hmm. We do have more than 40 use cases already developed in this area. We have 38 use cases developed for migration AI. So we are in the journey with our customers, but every step of the journey that we are making, we're trying to be there for customers and we're trying to enable the customer to have truly unique experience with SAP.
Yeah. Second that, that is a great way to end a good conversation here. Thanks a lot, Alina, for stopping
by
and taking time.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That was a very good conversation. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
You're welcome. And this was another episode of Data Lab Dialogues. We'll return very soon.